and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 569.
That's right. Tonight we are talking about absolute power tie-in that is Green Lantern number 14. That has our writer Jeremy Adams, our penciler Fernando Pissarin, our inker Claire Albert, colorist Romulo Fajardo Jr., letterer Dave Sharp, and then we have our various cover artists, assistant editor Jillian Grant, and editor Paul Kaminsky. So we open up over in Gamora Island, I guess, is this place where Amanda Waller was staging everything that we saw last issue in terms of, you know, like Kite Man's kite and all these things. Hal has broken free from containment, and he is distracting a couple of these guards, first with one of Toy Man's tops, which acts as like a flash grenade. He grabs his ring, which is depowered, but gets it back, puts it on his finger, runs away, but he gathers the attention of some other guards. Meanwhile, we cut back over to Alan Scott, who has been imprisoned by the Amazo, who took his abilities as well as some of the others of the JSA in the Task Force series that is ongoing right now. The Amazo that has Alan's abilities has, Alan has given it the moniker Jade Stone. For those, the only thing relevant here in terms of something for you folks at home is in the issue where the Amazo takes on Alan's powers, he takes on pretty much all of it, absorbs it, which we can talk about at some other point, but the act of absorbing the Starheart ability kind of infuses the Amazo that took on his abilities with free will. So he is struggling with his, I guess, own sentience and trying to decide of the free will that is being introduced to him and then his own programming and directives to handle things. So he's having a conversation with Alan and playing chess. Meanwhile, back over where Hal is trying to get away from people, he is under fire, looks at the nearby crate, and it's Condiment King's gun. So he has to do what he has to do, including squirting spicy mustard in people's eyes. He gets tackled, and another glass case shatters, and it's one of Blue Devil's old tridents. So he tells one of the guys to hold it, and he presses a button, and the guy goes rocketing off. Then he stumbles across some of Javelin's stuff and starts taking on people. Then the Jade Stone shows up, and says he's under arrest. Meanwhile, in the Tower of Fate, Carol Ferris is sitting with the members of the JSA that were with Alan when we last saw them, including Stargirl, Stripe, Hourman, Wildcat, Stitch, and a couple of others. And she's just kind of marveling at the fact of she's just a, you know, quote unquote civilian inside of the Tower of Fate and all of its twisty turvy stuff. So they say, you know, throughout their conversation, they just basically get over and say, you know what, they're going to spot any of us. They have files on all of us. We need a total unknown to, you know, kind of relay to us what's going on. And they all look at Carol. Meanwhile, over on Oa, Tharos is addressing the quote unquote council and updating them on everything that's been going on and saying, you know, hey, there's no such thing as security. How many times have the Owens been defeated? How many times has a great evil appeared out of nowhere to wipe out the universe? How many times have those with power thought they were safe? Which, you know, as much as I dislike Tharos, fair point. At least he knows his history. So he says, you know, when the choice is right, we'll give everybody else the choice. We give everybody, so many other people already, obey or die. Which leaves his fellow Durlans with some pause, because that is a really poignant silence at the end of that last panel. So we'll see if they stay agreeing with him throughout the rest of the story. Meanwhile, Jadestone is saying, hey, this is Hal Jordan, formerly a Green Lantern, a directive, eliminate or aid. So there's him struggling with his free will. He tries to fight back, fails again. And then he finally stumbles across Abracadabra's wand, activates it, and the whole place explodes. And Jadestone goes crashing through a wall, and Hal is gone. And meanwhile, elsewhere, Hal comes to some familiar friends, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman over on Themyscira at the Superhero Resistance headquarters, where not only has Hal accidentally teleported himself, but all of the cases that he was surrounded by for God knows how much of a perimeter. So he brought himself and a bunch of presents. That's nice. Meanwhile, over in Hub City, Carol pops out of a Dr. Fate portal with a little ankh around her neck, an amulet that she's supposed to touch if she needs to be teleported back to the Tower of Fate. And she's kind of put out into the public on her little mission to kind of figure out what's going on. And she's supposed to stay, you know, keep a low profile. But then we see Carol Ferris, you shall know my sorrow, as Nate goes flying out of the blown up side of a Las Vegas hotel room on his way to go find Carol. In the meantime, we have the backup, which is called The Shadow Lanterns by Mark Guggenheim. Artist is Derek Robertson. Colorist is Diego Rodriguez. Letterer, Dave Sharp. And then the same editor team. Lantern Di Proba, or Di Proba, is just, you know, another member of the Corps. He has some, he's going about various tasks as a Green Lantern member. He is a newer Green Lantern member, and throughout his tenure, short tenure as a Lantern, he has suspicions of Tharos. He knows what the Corps is supposed to be. He knows that the ring is supposed to seek out someone noble and brave and worthy, but he's not that sure if it's that way anymore. Because of everything that's been going on, he thinks it's not looking for any of that, but rather somebody who can be manipulated. So when he is selected and joins the Corps and meets Tharos, he notices that Tharos has his own ring, and he says, mine is just an honorific type ring. So throughout his suspicions, he talks to some of his other corpsmen, and they say basically he's crazy. The Lanterns have a new oath, which I won't even deign to read on this podcast, but it's clearly there as a self-serving thing for the Shadow Lanterns, because Lord Premier is in the oath. So it's an oath not to the Corps, it's an oath to the Lord Premier Tharos. So it's self-serving. The Shadow Lanterns get sent, a fleet of Shadow Lanterns get sent out on a mission to one of the blockades that Tharos has up, assuming somewhere within 2814, but he probably has them elsewhere as well, so it doesn't really matter where it is.
Well, it kind of does, but I know what you
mean. Well, you know, yeah. But anyways, he doesn't want his fellow Lanterns to die, so he says... I surmise that whatever influence Tharos had over the rings came from his own ring. I prayed that influence would wane the farther the rings were from his presence. And even if my hopes were in vain, my comrades still needed saving. Even though they are Shadow Lanterns, even though I am a Shadow Lantern, we are all Green Lanterns. And maybe, gods be willing, my ring will be free to find someone noble, someone brave, and this time someone worthy. So he sacrifices himself to save his team, hoping that his last true act of actual heroism, and Will does something to his ring to find somebody better suited than him to help fix this problem. And that's it.
Well, let's talk about the good stuff first, or the best, the best stuff, if you will. The Shadow Lanterns, now that we actually have a name for them, because I don't think we did before. So now we know all the Scab Lanterns, or the knockoff lanterns, as we've been kind of referring to them as, the Shadow Lanterns, which actually sounds better, which kind of makes sense, because it's almost like it's not truly a shadow government, because he is the head of it, but it is a shadow regime. So that does make sense. I do like the fact that this new lantern, even though, again, he does not necessarily know himself whether he was selected for the right reasons or not, but he kind of believes in the principle of the Green Lantern Corps, and that he could kind of tell something was rotten in the state of Denmark. So, and the fact that he was so distraught about all this that he basically tried to kill himself, or seriously contemplated it and went through the motions of at least entertaining, let's put it into practice, but the ring wouldn't let him kill himself, which is interesting, because I don't think the protection from mortal harm is there anymore. So I don't know necessarily why that would automatically prevent you from killing yourself. But either way, the fact that he kind of gets his wish at the end, because he basically does end up killing himself, but doing it nobly, hoping his ring will go off, because they're so far away from Tharos' influence that the ring may basically default to its traditional protocols for how to find a ring bearer. So, which is cool, depending on where it goes and who ends up getting that ring, that could be a nice little legacy thing. That part is cool. I thought that was really good. As far as the rest of the story, maybe the first two times Hal was using the bag of tricks to fight the guards, that was cool. But after it happened again and again and again, it's like you made your point. Don't push it. And then it kind of just becomes almost like a slapstick routine at this point. It's like, which wacky weapon is Hal going to get that either is going to look really stupid to use, or is going to look cool to use, or alternate. So I thought it started off strong. It doesn't make any sense at all. Well, maybe we'll get an explanation. Probably not. Certainly not in this book, of why Hal basically was able to take all the weapons with him to join the rest of the Justice League. But the only other part of this that I liked was, you kind of touched upon it a little bit, the fact that even though the council is full of Durlans, there's enough in what Tharos is saying and the way he's saying it that's giving them pause and making it, and enough to make where at least you give them credits. They're at least one of them was able to, speak his mind and say, basically, this is kind of wrong, and that this is like, it doesn't really matter that we control the council. Like even the idea that it gets brought out in the conversation that it doesn't really matter that we basically replaced every single ambassador with Durlans. If this ever gets out and everybody knows that we replaced their ambassadors, which gives the impression they didn't kill the ambassadors based on what the comments that are going on.
Yeah.
That if this gets out, basically it's just going to be war throughout the galaxy anywhere, the universe, because everybody's going to be coming after us for having basically the nerve to do that. So the suggestion is floated that let's just pretty much use the three blind guys there to mind wipe all the ambassadors that they duplicated and then put them back in their position of power. So they don't remember anything that happened when that they were removed at all. And Tharos shoots that down, kind of like it's better to have our hand on the wheel kind of thing, kind of like in Civil War, the Tony Stark in Black Widow view of the Accords. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, the Alan Scott stuff still seems forced into this book. I still don't get the point of it. I guess maybe it'll make sense. It seems forced. I don't know. The Carol stuff, again, because of this is part of a crossover, the fact that so much of this crap is happening off this book, and we have no way of knowing how much relevance it's going to have in this book at all, except for the fact that maybe up until the point when they stop having absolute power crossovers, then it probably may not have any meaning.
But, well, for our listeners, I'm reading the Task Force book and I'm reading the main book of Absolute Power. Not necessarily by choice. I mean, I guess it is my choice, but I believe those are the two main books that are going to give us anything in terms of context that we're going to need in terms of the issues you and I are going to be covering on here. So that's the only reason I'm reading him, is so that we can have this context. But I agree with you. Yeah, the fact that so much is happening outside of our title, and yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's, and again, I'm going to shut up because I rambled on, and I'll let you give your thoughts. Good. And I don't, and plus I honestly don't think, like, again, I don't think there's a lot of meat here to talk about, with the exception of the backup story. And it's still kind of a problem conceptually, philosophically, when the backup story ends up being better than the main story or more interesting than the main story. But this stuff with Tharos and the United Planets, just even forget about. I'll give Jeremy credit for trying to work the absolute power garbage into the context of the story that he's still telling, whether he was told to do so or whether this is his own, all on his own, figuring out a way that I can somehow tie this in so it doesn't seem as shoehorned in like Night Terrors. So I'll give him full credit for that. But this story is dragging on and on and on with no real resolution in sight, and we still have no effing clue, really. Well, you have a little, when we talked before, you were correct that there's a little bit of inkling to the method behind his Tharos's madness, but it's so vague. It doesn't mean anything. We still have really know what he's trying to do with the emotional spectrum
piecemeal.
Yes, yeah. The control that he has over it now, why isn't that enough to do? Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, it's not that interesting. I mean, Tharos is more interesting now than he was to start with, and I'll give Jeremy credit for that too. But, gee, I mean, my God, I mean, we know this goes on to what? Through issue 16, right? Because that's the tie-in with All In or whatever the hell it is. So, and that's...
October-ish, yeah.
Yeah, and there's no sign that, you know, we know that's not going to be the end of it, so there's no reason to think this is going to wrap up before, like, 20 issues. This is like, this is just going on too long. Maybe the Nate stuff could be borderline interesting whenever we get some payoff on that. And obviously we know this, the hints are that there's some wacky stuff with the emotional spectrum going on, which maybe has allowed something like the Sorrow Lanterns to be created, or other potential parts of the emotional spectrum, splinter sects of the emotional spectrum. But again, that would be more interesting than the stuff we're getting. And so there has to be something more to this. And the fact that we know that Philip Kennedy Johnson stuff is going to be coming into this book real soon, I don't know, man. It's really wearing me down.
So again, positivity stuff. Yes, the Shadow Lanterns, my favorite thing about this book right now, this backup story. I'm talking specifically about this issue 14. I told Mark my least favorite part of this was the art here. Because there is not a listed inker, I'm assuming Derek Robertson inked himself. I'm not sure he should have. I think this may have been better served with a different inker, because it does feel very ink heavy when I look at it. But anytime I've made those sorts of claims and stuff like that about what I deem to be particularly off about a piece of art, I do tend to refer to ink heavy type stuff and think it might be better served by a different person on that role, as opposed to the artists themselves or whomever they chose. I don't know if that's right or not. There is certainly a lot of detail that can be seen on some of these pages, but something about the art doesn't grab me, and my thought is it's an inker thing, but it doesn't really matter. I will say that despite it being inker heavy, this is obviously a bunch of alien creatures, and despite having problems with some of the actual art itself, the creature designs that I see are kind of cool looking here and there. So I think that's interesting. I think it's cool that we have this this little Ninja Turtle lantern, which is, we see only very briefly, but we kind of get a Ninja Turtle lantern, and I think that's kind of cool. I will say too that it's interesting that in this group shot, when we have the oath on the page, we can see like there's Metaphil and there's Larvox and definitely Salak, what looks like Gallius Zed, although I think isn't Gallius Zed supposed to be dead? So maybe just someone of Gallius's race. So we do see people we know of here. Is that supposed to be Badge? Maybe. I guess, because it's definitely not Chip anymore, right? So I guess any squirrel loose so you see now is Badge.
Why would it be Salak, though? It doesn't, unless he was trying to fake them out, because, I mean...
Yeah, unless it's like a flashback or something.
I mean, I know, but it's still odd, just because, I mean, the mere fact that the Lord Premier thing is... Let me read the oath because it is because it's stupid. But because I mean,
I think it's supposed to be though.
I hope it's supposed to be because yeah. We know rhythmically, you know, like parameter wise, it just doesn't go. In deepest space, on planets far and near, the Shadow Lanterns now are here, and all who would do evil will always fear the army that does the will of its Lord Premier.
The cadence is very off.
Yes, that's what I mean with the beat, it certainly ain't iambic pentameter. It just doesn't it rhythmically it doesn't work. So, and again, maybe that was by design, but that's why. But it seems odd even in the beginning if some of these characters were on board and then they went off. The mere fact that you're swearing allegiance to the Lord Premier, if that was, because that's why it makes me wonder if that's really. I know it looks like Salak. I don't know if it's really supposed to be Salak. Because that what you would think. Unless he's going, you know, deep, 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 deep undercover, as Eddie Murphy would say, that unless all along that would be something that would set you off your alarm bells across the fact that you're swearing allegiance to one person. But it is odd. But
yeah,
it's a cool scene.
Yes, I really loved this backup story. I think it's my favorite backup story of the series thus far. This is a Tales of the Core. That's what this is. This is a Tales of the Core that just so happens to be set during events of the current ongoing series. Tangentially, it's something that's happening with another lantern who we're not going to see again. That's not necessarily a qualification for Tales of the Core. Sometimes those other lanterns make other appearances, but this is a Tales of the Core. This is what we want, DC. This is what I want. I want to see this type of thing. And I think this is really cool that, forgetting even like taking a lantern like maybe Metaphil or any of the others I mentioned, Larvox or whatever, Gallia Zed, that we know, and putting them in the story of like somebody out there who's like, who knows what the core is supposed to be. It's interesting that Deproba is a new lantern recruited as Tharos is in power, but also because it's the DC universe and the Green Lantern Corps is not a new concept. He knows what the Green Lantern Corps is supposed to be by reputation. And he's a new lantern coming in, and he's not so like he believes that he's like, hey, I think I was picked because I can be easily manipulated, which and he seems like I'm humbled and I don't know if I'm worthy of this great honor, but he sees something sus is going on and he clocks it, pays attention. He does try to take the coward's way out. He's like, you know what? I can't be in Tharos's control. I can't do this. I'm going to kill myself. But it doesn't work. But he sees what the core should be, what it can be. And he's a newcomer to it because like, let's be honest, like because I've said this before, if I were in, you know, suddenly woke up one day and found myself in the DC universe, there's a bunch of things you would do. Like, how do I get back to my universe? Is there a way I can bring some power back to protect my universe? How would I do that? Like, you know, if I were given a ring, I think like a lot of us, I'd be like so overwhelmed with the idea that I'm entrusted with this thing and I'm so powerful and blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I'd peek behind the curtain. You know, I'd like to think I would, that I have that, you know, testicular fortitude, I guess, to do that. But I don't know. So the fact that this guy who thinks so little of himself, that he's, you know, willing to off himself and willing to think so little of himself, he's like, oh, I must be just easily manipulated and blah, 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 but still believes in the core and everything, despite being chosen for this incredible honor that most people would be blinded by. Like, this is it. This is what the core is about, what the core should be about. So it's also great to see like a new lantern recruited under Tharos's rule and not just like the died and true Green Lanterns who have always been there, still believing in what the core concept of the core is. And there are some people behind the scenes, not just your Saleks and stuff like that, who are seeing something is up and trying to fight against it. And I thought that was cool.
I don't necessarily think that it's fair in this instance to say that he was trying to take the coward's way out. Mm. He's completely disillusioned. He's kind of, because he was happy. He was kind of proud to be chosen as a Green Lantern, and then to find out that in all likelihood, even though you can make a case to what he did at the end, kind of proved that may not have been the reason why he was really chosen. But the fact that the criteria for choosing Green Lanterns had changed, and once you find out for a fact that it seems like basically they're Lemming Lanterns, and that's the criteria for the rings. Well, once they send out the tough lanterns, like if it is Badge, that could they have Badge, because it looks like Badge, it looks like he gets Badge's ring, right? Isn't Badge the one who gets, if it is Badge, isn't he the one that gets killed fighting the thing?
Those are two different squirrel-like lanterns, it looks like, because this one on getting attacked by these bugs before Proba gets his, because then you look at the group shot, there's the other. That I think the one standing there within the group shot is Badge.
Yeah, but honestly, wouldn't it make more sense? Badge would be the one that would be one of the ones they would know would not be likely to roll over, so they would send him out to get killed.
I don't know, but I'm just saying I don't think it's Badge.
But either way, the fact that you could be right, but either way, the fact that they're sending the lanterns that they know or they suspect are not going to roll over and either cave to Tharos, or who are too strong-willed to be manipulated, that they're sending, those are the ones they're sending out on the really dangerous mission because they're really doing everything they can to cook the books, hoping they're going to die. Mm-hmm. And then the ring will go to find somebody who's much, much, much more weak-willed. So the fact that he's happy, or he seems content with the fact that he's chosen to, by the old criteria, and finding out that he's just completely disillusioned. So it's the fact that I'm a Green Lantern, but not for the right reason. And it's like, and no one wants to listen to me when I'm trying to kind of tell them either. So it's like, so I don't necessarily think that's, I think it might've been an act in desperation and complete depression, but I don't necessarily think he was taking the coward's way out. He couldn't see any other alternative to how he could try to make something out of this. And then eventually he does, because of the fact that, hey, if we get far enough away from Tharos, then his control over the ring in theory and the ring selection process would be less. So that way, maybe the ring will actually go to somebody who deserves it.
Yeah. You were bringing up the stuff about the Durlans and how they're kind of pressing back on what Tharos is doing here, what he wants. He says, one of the other Durlans says, I suggest we use the Unseeing to mind wipe the captured ambassadors we imitate. But he says that maybe Tharos actually did kill them and didn't tell them. So, yes, you're right. That line seems to suggest the ambassadors are just being held on to, but only insofar as the other Durlans are aware.
Yeah. That could be just. It could just be the equivalent of as we find out what's happening with all the prisoners that have just been miraculously killing themselves, which we love, whatever. Like, we found out the last issue was basically how he basically got rid of the guy who contributed to killing his father and bullied him as a kid and all the stuff. That's the pattern that they've been doing to awful lot of people. So it could be the same kind of thing. It's like, well, these people don't realize what's really going on, and which would make sense because he's already getting pushback. So why wouldn't he get pushback for something much more problematic? It's like we also don't know the process as far as not the physical process, but we don't know what the selling point was that Tharos used to convince everybody, to the fellow Durlans, that this is the best thing for us right now, is to swap, to basically replace these ambassadors, because he may very well have sold them with, it's like, we just need to do this for a while, and then eventually once we get what we need, then we'll figure out a way to make it right, and this isn't like a permanent change or whatever. Just like roll with me, work with me on this. But he, in his mind, he always knew that they were going to be that. You know, once they did the switch, he was going to make sure that they couldn't switch back, because he was going to kill them. So you could very well be right about
that. For those of you who know I'm a Ragman fan, expecting me to comment on Stitch, you're not going to get it. I know I'm aware of Stitch. I know who Stitch is. I was reading Titans Academy when it started up, and it was a good book. Stitch is not connected to Ragman. Stitch is one of Dr. Fate's apprentices. It's like it's essentially a living effigy, a rag doll come to life with magical abilities. It is not Ragman connected as of yet. in the DC universe. Yeah, it obviously seems like something that really should be when you have a name like that, look like that, and are connected to the magic side of the DC universe, but it's not there. So we don't have to worry about that, at least yet. I know Mark doesn't like the concept of the Jade Stone for the most part. I kind of do. Put it this way. I'm curious about it. The idea of a robot with the advanced capabilities of something like an Amazo, which I always thought Amazos could just mimic abilities. I forgot. I don't know that I ever remember them actually being able to absorb to where the other individual can no longer use their abilities. But I guess that's obviously changed. So that's neither here nor there. But the idea of absorbing the star, something as powerful as the Star Heart, into something as complex as the programming behind Amazo, and it's suddenly not being able to understand and cope with the idea of free will that's being introduced to it. Obviously, we have to see how it shakes out, but that's an interesting concept to me to be at least curious moving forward. So there's that. I agree with you, Mark, you know, the kind of 1-2 punch every other panel of like, hey, Condiment King's guns. Oh, hey, Blue Devil's thing. Oh, hey, the javelin. Hey, oh, blah, 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 whatever. But also, I like seeing Blue Devil's trident there. I thought that was cool. And Carol, I guess it remains to be seen. But by and large, though, I agree that I'm still trying to hold true to my promise, though, of not holding Jeremy 100% responsible for him being, you know, asked and forced to play in the sandbox. So I'm trying to judge it for what it is and what it has to be as per DC, as opposed to something else. So
I don't know. I don't really think there's much else for me to. I don't have anything else really to say about this issue.
Yeah, I agree. This Starro stuff is going on too long. And I want to be clear. I don't necessarily like Tharos, but there's reasons for that. And if Jeremy's trying to build a long term villain that we don't just kill off by the time we're done with him, that's fine. Like I completely understand trying to add something to the universe in terms of like a new villain and stuff. I get that. But it's taking too long to get to his motives. It's taking too long to get to his plan. It's taking too long to get the information we need. And yes, it sucks that we keep getting pulled in to Night Terrors, to this absolute power. And then now we have a line-wide initiative in terms of DC All-In, kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other, but part and parcel with this absolute power thing. And like, not absolute power.
All-In.
All-In, but also DC Absolute, right?
Yes.
So there's also this other stuff that's going on. So you have to keep constantly adjusting to kind of your course to kind of match the heading of the whole of the universe as a whole. And as Ron Mars was fond of saying, you know, this is a sandbox you're expected to play in, and you have to leave the toys in the sandbox when you're done. So like we get it, but that doesn't mean that. You know, just because like you have to adapt, but it doesn't mean we can just keep kicking this can down the road over and over again in the course of adapting. Because while I appreciate the work that's being done to try and roll with the punches and make things interesting and all this other stuff, like we're just adding to the mess here already. And I'm not saying it, can we get to this? Can we finish up with Tharos as in kill the character? I'm saying, can we get there so we can understand where things are heading, as opposed to just, because it'll be in October, it'll be a year and a half. It won't be 2 years. It'll be a year and a half. So, and Tharos is still showing up in the solicits as like, you know, his thing. So like, yes, we're now adding the Allen stuff to this with the Jade Stone. And then we, you know, we're trying to lay the groundwork for Carol, which I do appreciate, because if Carol's going to be a big part of the main Justice League title, and we have her featured a lot in the Green Lantern title already, it makes sense to kind of have Jeremy help shepherd her there. But now also he's taking on the responsibility of trying to incorporate and pull in the Philip Kennedy Johnson stuff. For win or for lose, you know, however we feel about reception and stuff, he's pulling that into and not letting that die on the vein, on the vine, and just pulling it in there. So we're adding yet another thing to it. And it's just like, okay, I appreciate the work you're trying to do. Whether I agree with it or not is another story, but I appreciate the effort you're going through. But that doesn't mean we can just keep these questions burning a little longer and a little longer and a little longer. I need to know what's going on with Tharos. I need to know what's going on with Kyle. I can't just see one of my, you know, like one of my favorite, like, I appreciate that you're using one of my favorite lanterns, but you're not. He's sitting in the corner going, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I want to see something happen. And it's just taking too long to get there. So yeah, it bugs me. Last thing I say, just a small side note here. Fuck you, Batman, because the first thing out of Batman's mouth, and obviously he's in shadow, but by the voice and what's written here, it's fucking Batman. Hal, are you okay? That's either Wonder Woman or Superman, probably Wonder Woman. We're compromised. If he could find us, that's Batman, obviously. What do you mean if he could find us? If Hal of all people could find us, then we're definitely screwed. Like, what do you mean? He's part of the team. Fuck you.
Well, that's kind of par for the course these days. It seems like it does make you wonder about. Obviously, they're not entirely pushing Hal out, which doesn't mean there's not a significant portion of people in power that would love to if they thought it would work and they thought from a sales perspective the alternative was viable. But I mean, you just look at how you know the one appearance Hal has had in that Crisis on Infinite Earths in the first two parts, and it's just to make him look like an asshole. It's like, what's the point of even including him? That's the point, to include him so he looked like a dick. So I don't know. I don't get it. One last thing, because yeah, I don't think there's really much.
Yeah, I think we're done. Yeah.
Yes, please. I mean, but in general, I would say we can't entirely give Jeremy, not that you were, we can't entirely give him a pass because of the idea that, well, all these events keep coming up and they keep getting in the way and they keep causing. Well, yeah, but part of the reason they keep getting in the way is because this GD story is going on too long, period. If it wasn't a story that was going on, it would have been going on at least a year without any interruptions or forced entries by DC mandatory tie-ins. It still would have been going on for a year. That's too damn long for stories. I wish people would stop with this. And that's I guess one of the reasons why I hated that season concept, because that tends to really be a justification for having an entire 12 issue storyline carrying through, as opposed to you might be building for something. And down the road, but the arcs, but you have 2-issue arcs, 3-issue arcs, 4-issue arcs that are kind of individual that may be laying breadcrumbs for something that all comes together. We don't do that much anymore. And so I can't give him as much of a pass because again, if there's no end game, I mean, he has one, I'm sure, but it's like, if he keeps going down the road he's going down, this book is going to be a book now that might keep struggling to stay into the top 100 instead of struggling into the top 75.
So I mean, that was Thorne's folly, right? Like whether or not you like Thorne.
Yeah, the 3-year plan.
Yeah, he had a 3-year plan. It's like you there's no way you could have possibly known you were going to be on that book that long.
And it was beyond not being able to predict. You don't have that much clout to think that you shouldn't even think, unless your ego is running wild, to think that it is likely that you were going to have 3 years on the book. I mean, or unless you were that, you know. Again, it's still ego. The fact that if you thought the stuff you were shoveling was going to work so well, and we know DC interfered in some of what he wanted,
yep.
But still, it's like you can't do that. It's kind of, like, and I think that is a folly in general of having big picture ideas and know you where you want to go is okay, but again, you look at kind of how Johns went about this, that he was laying breadcrumbs for bigger things, but like the first issue of Howl. The first year of Hal being Green Lantern again, it wasn't like, oh, one 12-issue arc telling one story. That's not what it was like. So I just think – I don't think that's really effective, generally speaking. So once in – yeah, you might be able to get a Reign of the Superman kind of storyline once in a while that works like that. Of course, that's easier to do because it was carried through like 4 books. So even though it may have been going on for a while, it was only like 3 or 4 issues technically of each book. So – but either way, it's just I – there's still some things I like about this book, but we have to get this in gear, and we need to find out what his plan is, basically so we can get rid of him and stop him. It's time to get rid of him. It's time to cut this crap, fix the emotional spectrum, Probably get the Guardians back soon. But we need to get some of this stuff straightened away and straightened up and up, out, corrected, and move on. Because this is not, and again, we don't need this with Derlins. We've already been down this road with Derlins once before, and that was a friggin' disaster. This is more interesting so far. But still, you would think learning from those who fail to learn from the mistakes of history.
You mentioned Reign of the Superman, so that's my one last thing. The suit that Superman's wearing,
is his recovery suit. It does look like the black suit from, that's what it looks like.
Okay.
It's certainly an homage to it, even if it's not literally supposed to be, it's the same one, but that's, yeah, but I noticed that too that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah. All right. That's this issue. Also, I know I said it a lot, but give me more of these Tales of the Core backups. Backups that I actually enjoy. One off, tell one story, one and done, and don't follow through for three issues and leave us hanging on any sort of resolution.
The guy, you mean? Yeah. That was a friggin' waste.
Tales of the Core is exactly what you do with a backup. That's the kind of shit I want to see. Even if it's not pivotal to the main story, I love a Tales of the Core.
Yes. So yeah, that does speak volumes too about the fact that that was like hands down, that's like the highlight of this issue.
And it's not just us, by the way. There are a lot of people over on Twitter reacting very positively to that. Just FYI.
And of course, you're going to make a case. It's addition by subtraction. And part of the reason why the backup story is good because the main story is not overly compelling. But I think both can be true at the same time. I think this is interesting because it's interesting, and because this lantern is cooler than and more interesting than the majority of the things we've got. I mean, again, since when Hal went into space, that's when the book was supposed to get better and more interesting, arguably, because we were supposed to be getting more information about. And you can make a strong case this book has actually taken a big step downward since Hal's gone into space, with a few little, like a little roller coaster ups and then a drop again. But I don't know. So let's put this issue to bed, and let's just hope the 0 hour anniversary issue is good, because man, we need something that's good. We need something that's really a fun, cool read. And we're not getting a lot of that right now. So let's talk about more non-fun, cool stuff. so let's talk about D23. I don't think we're going to spend that much time on this, because in all honesty, there were in some aspects of Disney, of their company, there were some news. In a lot of aspects, there really wasn't news. So it depends on where your interests are in with Disney, because obviously there's different, branches that you might have more of an interest in. So for the MCU, continuing what we got in Comic-Con, there was going to be some major project announcement, some green lighting of a project that either we thought was coming but hasn't been made official.
Like
Spider-Man, which a lot of people still think Spider-Man is going to come between Doomsday and Secret Wars, because I think there's still because they did remove some dates off their release schedule, but I think there still is a 2026 release date.
Well, I brought it up because when we did talk SDCC in that episode, D23, we're probably going to hear about Spider-Man.
Or so. Shang-Chi. Yeah. Those are the two most people were expecting, but no, which on the bright side, being glass half full, it does seem like that means that at least Marvel is showing, Feige is showing they have changed direction. They're not putting the cart before the horse, a la Kathleen Kennedy, not announcing too many more projects that are way down the road, and they're focusing on the things that they already have in development or finished, because we literally know every single movie right now that comes out before Doomsday. And that's even if Blade ever gets made before Doomsday, which it probably won't, but there's still a chance it could. They're conveniently avoiding talking about Blade whatsoever, which means maybe it's up in the air. Maybe they're hoping they can pull it together and still make it, even if it doesn't come out in November of next year, but maybe they can squeeze it out like in February of 2026 before Doomsday.
If they quit, to use a phrase from across the pond, if they quit taking the piss with fucking Blade and try and overcomplicate it. Let's be honest, that could be the lowest budget Marvel movie ever made. And if it was done right, it could still come out to be an incredible movie, because that's the kind of shit that you do with a Blade story. It doesn't need crazy ass Marvel level CGI bullshit. It could still come out between now and Doomsday if they would just quit fucking around and get the story right.
Which again makes you wonder again, and this could be the difference between what Marvel had been, the direction they've been going in, trying to make things more complicated. We had heard there was a version of the script, whether it's true or not, that Blade was almost like a supporting character, and of course there was like a female lead, which is hey, that'd be shocking for Marvel or Disney to be doing shit like that.
What, his daughter? Was it supposed to be?
I don't remember what the rumors were, and I don't know if it's true. I'm just saying it wouldn't. Let's be blunt. We don't know if it's true. If it had been true, somebody was taking that approach with the script, would it really shock anybody based on some of the folks from the focal points? The point is, regardless of whether Blade comes out or not, gets finished and comes out before Doomsday, we literally know. Let's forget Blade. Let's do a mind wipe. Forget about Blade was even ever put on the release schedule. We know literally every single movie right now that's coming out before Doomsday, because two of them are finished and one of them just started filming. So that reinforces the fact. But the conversation that you and I had, that it is, barring an act of God, I don't see there's any way Doomsday doesn't come out in spring of 2026, because that's literally the next project that's going to start filming for them at this rate. But if you were expecting new projects, even new TV shows officially announced that you hadn't heard of before, well, this was not your D23 because you got nothing. You got nothing. So what they showed you a Daredevil trailer. They showed you a new Agatha Harkness trailer, which, again, if you liked the first teaser trailer, you probably liked this trailer. If you thought the first teaser trailer did nothing for you, I don't think this trailer did much more. They did that. They showed you Ironheart stuff. They talked about the Marvel Zombies animated show, the Wakanda animated show. They didn't touch on the either Vision or Wonder Man coming down the road. So they're being very careful to focus in on the stuff they basically already have either finished, almost finished, or it's entering production. But again, disappointing to a certain extent, because I think a lot of people were hoping we'd get a new announcement, at least of a movie. Lucasfilm, you got the little, which is barely a trailer for The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Someone posted online that that he's supposed to have what's the name of his ship again?
Oh, the Razor Crest, because I think that was just a flashback. But
Someone said, somehow he's got the Razor Crest back, and I immediately responded. It got a lot of traction. I immediately responded with the gift from Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, where the guy's like, the blade was broken. It has been remade.
And other people focused in on a more direct tie in, going back to Rise of Skywalker, somehow the Razor Crest has returned. but the trailer is, most of it. I mean, they just started filming not that long ago, so you wouldn't expect. There was a lot of basically archive footage in there. So they showed that. They showed the skeleton crew show, which I think comes out in December, which looks like a kid show. It looks like Goonies in space, which I think some people have made the analogy to. Yeah. It could be cool. Again, I'll watch it. I mean, I give every one of those shows a shot, and if it bores me in the beginning, which Andor did, which is why I haven't gone back to it, and I know some people love it, and maybe when it's done, I'll go back and watch it from scratch. But I think that's really the major stuff from Lucasfilm. We know Pixar, which is pretty much, I guess, all they can do these days for the most part, is come up with sequels. Even though I think they did talk about a new project, but Toy Story 5.
Let Toy Story die. Holy shit.
Spoiler alert. I have never seen one Toy Story movie.
The concept of toys versus a digital age, I admit that's intriguing, but holy God, let Toy Story die. You keep trying to give it this final send off, starting with Toy Story 3. And then it seemed like a really good final send off because Andy leaves the toys at this little girl's house as he goes off to college. That seems so good. But somehow they did an okay follow-up with Toy Story 4, and that could be a good ending. Just let it fucking die.
It's a cash cow, so they won't let it die. And because, let's be blunt, a lot of their original properties they've come out with haven't done all that well recently.
Soul. Soul is one of my favorites of the newer generation of Pixar movies.
Yeah, I don't think I actually ever saw Soul. I know it's on Plus, but I've never watched it. I haven't watched many of their movies recently. I mean, obviously, I saw Lightyear, and that was not horrible, but it was kind of dry. It wasn't all that thrilling. And with Incredibles 3 somewhere down the road. Again, I mean, I never saw Incredibles 2. I liked the first one. I still never saw the second one. And The only other thing I cared about, I think they showed another Moana trailer. I did like Moana. I didn't watch it until it was on Netflix, but I liked it. Doesn't mean I'm going to see it in the theater, but that's something I will at least probably watch when it's on Disney Plus. And they did hint at, which I saw major concerns about, the live action Lilo and Stitch movie, which I am so protective of Lilo and Stitch because that is such a great movie. A movie long before Kevin Smith kind of became weepy at everything. When they were, I remember them asking him about, I think, like the best movies of the year from 2002, and he zeroed in on Lilo and Stitch, because Lilo and Stitch was pretty much, he said it was essentially a perfect movie because everything you would want to feel or expect to feel in a movie, happy, sad, everything is, everything was wrapped up in that movie. I love that movie. And I'm really leery, even if you think Stitch can look halfway decent, which I don't know if that little preview convinced me. But I don't think that's a movie I don't like this trend at all that they're doing anyway. But that's, hey, again, talk about why can't they let it die? Because it's more money.
I thought he was well designed in terms of his CGI rendering, but that pale blue washout color they gave him.
Yes. Yeah. He should be a richer blue. And again, maybe that's one of those things where you throw it out there just to see what people say, kind of like a Sonic.
We'll pull a Sonic, yeah.
Yeah, and do some changes. So I'm leery about that. Most of the stuff with Disney was related to the parks. There was a lot of park news. And again, some stuff they didn't, it's kind of funny, some stuff they didn't say about the park expansion, which now came out shortly afterwards, and now some people are not as thrilled with. In the Magic Kingdom itself, in Disney World, they announced that they're going to add on to Frontierland to do some Cars attractions, which, again, Cars means nothing to me. I think it's one of the worst Pixar movies. I know it's a cash cow for them, because especially for kids. Kids
just love
that.
I like the first one, but yeah, that's about it.
And I thought the first one was okay, but it wasn't great. It's not vintage Pixar. But you can understand why they would want to do that, and I think Cars Land and Disneyland is successful. So they're going to expand Frontierland to have some attractions, and then they're going to do Villains Land, which was rumored for a long time to be what the fifth park was always rumored, that the idea was to do a Villains Land, which basically would mean, for people who don't know, I said park, so that's essentially what the fifth gate would be. So that the idea was conceptually would be it would join the Magic Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom, and Epcot as the fifth Disney theme park, part making up Disney World. But instead of doing it, they're just doing a add-on, which will be a couple of rides, and I think there's going to be shopping and things like that too. Now, what they didn't tell you is where they're putting it, and I guess now everything it looks like what they're going to do is they're pretty much going to wipe out what the Rivers of America, and they're going to wipe out Tom Sawyer Island, and it's going to be that area kind of like to the kind of behind and to the left of Haunted Mansion, and I think a little bit to the right of Thunder Mountain Railroad, Big Thunder. That's where they're going to be doing all this expansion. So a lot of people are not happy about that, just because, again, this is an original opening day attraction. The steamboat, the ferry boat, and of course Tom Sawyer Island. I can understand a little bit of that pushback. I got to be honest with you. I was thinking about this when I heard this after D23. Like, I can't tell you the last time I was on Tom Sawyer Island. I don't think Liz and I ever went on Tom Sawyer Island, and all the time she and I went when we were going all the time. And if that's not the case, then the last time I went probably was like 1983, probably was the last time I was on Tom Sawyer Island. So I have no sentimental attachment to it or nostalgia for me, but I understand why some people do. And it will absolutely fundamentally change the vibes of that part of Liberty Square, how it connects to Haunted Mansion is part of Liberty Square, but how it connects that the whole nuance and the whole environment. So I can understand that a little bit.
Americana is too political now.
Yeah, but I don't know if that stuff should be, I guess. And that's, I know that's not your point anyway, because what should be and what is are two entirely different arguments. Mm-hmm. We know that. You can make a case, hey, it's Tom Sawyer, so it's that racist mother effort Mark Twain, of course, which means you're missing the whole point of the stories. But I don't know. I think it's lazy too, because sometimes it's easy to just wipe out something as opposed to just, you got land, not like you can't build. But either way, They're going to do a Monsters, Inc. land over in Hollywood Studios, which I think a lot of people think where the launch bay is now, for where the Star Wars launch bay was in its glory and still kind of exists, but it's not a shop anymore and it's not a theater. It's just basically a meet and greet where you go get your pictures taken with like Chewbacca and Kylo or Vader, whoever the hell they have at a given time. That's probably the area where they're going to expand out to do Monsters, Inc., which the roller coaster idea looks kind of cool. Doing the doors. Doing the doors, the doors from the rooms. That seems cool. They're going to be doing rumored for a while. Hollywood Magic. Let's try it again. Animal Kingdom, Dino Land USA is being wiped out, and they're going to do basically like a Tropical Americas land where the Encanto ride is going to be in Dinosaur, which is one of my favorite rides. This really stinks. That's probably one of the few rides that they've taken away, along with the Great Movie ride at Hollywood Studios. That really is going to bother me that it's going to be gone. But they're going to transform Dinosaur into another Indiana Jones attraction, which is not going to be a duplicate, story-wise, of what they have in Disneyland. But it's going to be fundamentally operate the same, because Dinosaur and the Indiana Jones ride in Disneyland use the same track system. So the ride is going to operate very similarly. It's just going to tell different stories. And I know Disneyland, they announced the Avatar. They're going to make an Avatar land in Disneyland. They're going to be expanding. Or they're going to be actually
Pandora.
Well, they don't have Pandora.
Hmm?
Pandora only exists in Disney World.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so but that's, I think, what they're doing, is they're going to be carrying some of that over. I'm pretty sure there's no Avatar tie-in currently in Disneyland, but there will be. And which, of course, they announced the next title of the Avatar movie, which I forget what it is, but we know it has to do with fire and ashes or something. They're going to be doing stuff with Avengers Campus, which I guess is ride free, I guess, now in Disneyland, but it's going to have roller coasters and like the Infinity Defense and some Tony Stark riding coaster, things like that. So I thought overall D20s. There was nothing that came out of D23 that I felt any passion about.
Yeah. Very underwhelming.
Which is disappointing. I mean, you can't say it's surprising, because these things are hit or miss. It's like when we've covered, let's be honest, we've covered like a couple of years ago when we covered the Disney investors call. Sometimes that's more interesting than the stuff that comes out in Comic-Con or
D23. Yeah.
So it's, but
the news about Eternals didn't that come out after?
Oh, something about that Eternals 2 is 100% officially dead.
Yeah.
Well, that's like another news, like water is wet, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you can also see why that's not like a featured. Who has a D23 and Expo and goes, we're going to devote stage time to telling you this project not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, on the bright side, it kind of shows, at least on the surface, that they have learned some lessons. Even if they did it grudgingly, they have learned some lessons. I mean, clearly the Eternals, along with, you could probably make a case that the Eternals, obviously, along with the Marvels, have been the two biggest misfires in phases 4 and 5, which kind of is saying a lot, because there've been a whole lot of things in phases 4 and 5 that haven't been exactly great. So, but acknowledge, I mean, will we see the characters again? Yeah, you almost have to. I mean, they set it up with the Celestials potentially judging Earth soon and all this stuff. I mean, that story just wasn't good. And the characters were really not that compelling. They would probably, either way, that would have been a better show. That probably would have been a better 10-episode show. You could have gotten more meat there. But yeah, that you're right. That is something that kind of has come out post D23. But I think it is ultimately on some levels disappointing that we still didn't get anything new Marvel-wise. But, I mean, because at some point, you're going to have to. The Spider-Man thing is still puzzling. It really is puzzling. I mean, especially because, I mean, the latest stories or rumors I've heard is that Sony and Marvel are more on the same page now about how to approach this, which still might not be true. Because that was supposedly the big hang-up, is that Sony wanted to be big and more big and more of a direct tie into Secret Wars, and Marvel wanted to stick with the ground level friendly neighborhood Spider-Man thing that they were seemingly setting up at the end of No Way Home. We'll see. It is puzzling. He is almost inarguably the most popular character they have at the moment. And to go this long without at least telling you when the next movie is, didn't have to be out yet. But considering they gave us two Spider-Man movies like in 2 years, and now we're going to be sitting probably for at least 4 years at least until we get one. And that's actually, no, that's not even accurate. 4 years would mean it would come out next year. And we pretty much can take it to the bank unless there's some surprise announcement in the fall that Spider-Man 4 is coming out in the fall of 2025, basically replacing Blade, and it's going into production before the end of 2024. Unless we get that, there's really no way that it can fit into the release schedule until 2026. So we'll see. The best news is that it seems to keep the momentum building towards Doomsday, that they are dedicated and that's their next project that they're going to be focusing everything in on, which they should at this stage. I mean, because they got to do something.
All right. I think that's it. One last thing I will say is regular season football starts on September 5th. We would want, if there was going to be a fantasy league, I would hope that we would do it at the very latest, the weekend of the 31st and September 1st. This is the last time I'm saying it, as in ever. If we don't do a league this year, I'm done trying to get one together. And that's not like I'm disappointed in you listeners. It's just like if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. Otherwise, I'm done trying to make it happen or trying to do anything. I'm not going to go through this like we're pulling fucking teeth here. If a bunch of comic book nerds like ourselves are not into football, I can understand that. I know those two things don't often cross over. So if anybody wants to give it a try, I think we, as of right now, at least for an 8-person league, we at least need 4 more people. We've talked about it on other shows. I'm not going to give a bunch of details about it. This episode goes up next week as we record this. We're recording this the 14th. So you got about a week or in some change to let us know if you want to be a part of that. And Mark will tell you here in just a minute all the different ways to get a hold of us. But if you'd like to be part of a Lantern Cast Fantasy Football League, please let us know. Otherwise, it's never, ever going to happen. I'm not trying again in the subsequent years. I'm just giving up on the dream.
Chad says, F-O, you bitches.
You can quit. I appreciate the people who have already said, you know what, I'd like to give it a try. Thank you so much. But if we don't have enough people to do it, then we don't have enough people to do it. And I'm not going to bang my head against the wall season after season trying to get one going. So if it's not happening now, it's never going to happen. So unless Mark or somebody else wants to devote time to try and put one together, but I'm done. So
I can understand that.
If people want to reach out to us, how do they do so?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, X, like us on Facebook, #GLcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
You mentioned Twitter. I wanted to say something just super quick. For those of you following us over there, you'll notice that we have the official blue check mark on our account, which means that the account is verified. And when you click learn more, it says the blue check mark means that this account has an active subscription to X Premium and meets our eligibility requirements. No, it doesn't. That blue check mark was added when I started trying to do Twitter advertisements for the GL June crossover this year, just to test things out. And I think because I put a payment method out there in order to do that, they registered that as a quote unquote subscription. Well, I have been diligently checking my card and there hasn't been a new draft or anything of any of that since GL June stuff has come out. No, I am not paying for a subscription to Twitter Blue. I don't fuck with Elon like that or any of this stuff. I don't see this point of having a paid subscription on a social media site. So now the only reason I'm not saying that over on Twitter is because I'm just going to be completely honest with you. Having a blue check mark does afford certain benefits in terms of visibility of posts. And I'm not about to look, I'm not getting charged for it. But I'm not going to about to shoot ourselves in the foot to do anything to proactively get it taken away either. But I will tell you right now that we're not paying for shit over there on Twitter. So I don't know what the blue check mark, quote unquote, really means. But it damn sure doesn't mean that we have an active subscription to anything. So just in case anybody saw that change over on our Twitter account and thought we were paying for it, we sure as hell are not.
I And we can expect that check mark to go away real quickly once this episode drops. Thank you, Chad Vokelman. Thank you.
I'm sure he'll have snitches everywhere. But like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I this is not the first time I've heard somebody go like, I'm not paying for Twitter Blue. I don't know what the hell is happening and why I have the check mark. I think it's things like that where you pay for an ad once and you're like, oh, you gave us money, so you have the subscription. No. No, it doesn't, because I haven't had a charge since the advertisement, so I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
And on that note, so next episode, in some way, shape, or form, it'll be the 0 hour 70th anniversary. God, we won't be around for that one. Oh, you might be. It'll be the 0 hour 30th anniversary one shot. No matter what. I'm being vague on purpose, even though I think we kind of know where in all likelihood what it's going to be at this point. But just in case we get thrown a positive, a pleasant curveball, we know that will be the topic as we celebrate our 400th episode. properly numbered episode. From 170 was our first, so 570. Well, we wanted to save some. I think we both did, but I really pushed to make sure there was something at least topic-wise, something special for episode 570. So, and it wasn't going to be War Journal. I'm telling you that now. Hell no.
By R, Mark means myself and him.
No War Journal. No. Maybe 670 we can do War Journal.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.